The Netflix documentary about Ray Gunn, formerly Rachel Gunn, the Australian academic and breakdancer who competed at the Paris Olympics last year, drops its trailer this week. And it's worth a moment because the original story was one of those internet phenomena that revealed something about how viral judgment works. Gunn competed in Olympic breaking, performed a set that was widely mocked online, and became a global meme almost overnight. The mockery was immediate, widespread, and often pretty cruel. What people didn't always engage with was that she was legitimately qualified under the Olympic selection criteria. She won the Oceania Championship, and that she was competing against athletes from countries where breaking is a deeply established cultural tradition, particularly South Korea and the United States.
The documentary format is interesting for this story, because it gives Gunn the narrative control she didn't have when the memes were spreading. Whether the documentary is good or not, the existence of a Netflix deal suggests there's a substantial audience that either wants to understand what actually happened or wants to revisit the moment with the distance that a year provides. I'll be curious whether it shifts the public perception or whether the meme image is too solidified.
The AOC story is in a different category, less entertainment, more the weird intersection of domestic politics and social media culture. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez posted about egg freezing, which is a personal reproductive health decision. And some Republican media figures attacked those posts in ways that the White House apparently thought were counterproductive enough to publicly distance themselves from.
The White House distancing itself from Republican attacks on AOC is genuinely unusual. Typically, you'd expect rhetorical alignment. The distancing suggests someone in the White House communications shop calculated that the egg-freezing attacks were creating a narrative about reproductive politics that the administration doesn't want to own, particularly as reproductive rights continue to be a major electoral mobilization issue.
There's also the Fairfax County story. A prosecutor reviewing video of an ICE agent pointing a gun at a Virginia woman during what appears to have been an enforcement action. The details of that case matter enormously. The circumstances under which ICE agents draw weapons, the accountability structures when those actions are caught on video, and the relationship between federal immigration enforcement and local prosecutors. Fairfax County's decision to review the video rather than defer entirely to federal jurisdiction is itself a statement about where local prosecutors see their authority.
On that note, Marcus, I want to use the second half of this segment for something we try to do once per episode, genuinely interrogating our own most confident claims. And the claim I want to put under pressure is the one we made in our cyber attack segment. That I operating in real time inside live attacks represents a fundamental and decisive shift in the offense-defense balance.
I'd push back on the framing before you even start. I think we were careful. We described what the black hat researchers demonstrated and drew out the implications. But let's stress test it.
The strongest version of the counterargument goes like this. Security researchers have been demonstrating alarming proof-of-concept attacks for 30 years. The gap between what's demonstrable in a controlled research environment and what's actually deployed at scale in real-world attacks has historically been large and slow to close. The AI-assisted cyber attack that works beautifully in a black hat demo requires significant resources, specific target knowledge, and operational sophistication to deploy against a hardened enterprise network. Most attackers who use AI right now are using it for spear phishing email generation and code assistance, not real-time autonomous adaptation.
That's a real tension. The research shows capability. Capability doesn't automatically become prevalent threat. And there's a countervailing force that we didn't discuss. Defenders also have an eye. The same real-time adaptation capability that helps an attacker navigate around defenses also helps a defender identify anomalous behavior patterns faster. It's not obvious that an eye on offense beats an eye on defense. It's possible that the equilibrium doesn't change as dramatically as the alarming framing suggests.
What would need to be true for that to hold? You'd need an eye-assisted defense to deploy faster than an eye-assisted offense, which requires enterprise security teams to adopt AI defense tools at a pace they haven't historically moved at. Security teams are generally more conservative than attackers about adopting new tools precisely because their AI-assisted defense failing catastrophically is a disaster, whereas an attacker's AI-assisted attack failing is just one failed attempt.
So the specific indicator to watch, the thing that would tell us whether the alarming framing is warranted or whether it's research environment theater, is the breach data. If we start seeing major enterprise breaches where the forensic analysis shows attack patterns that clearly couldn't have been human-directed at the speed they moved, that's evidence the capability is being deployed in the wild. If breach data over the next 18 months continues to look like it does today, mostly credential stuffing, mostly unpatched vulnerabilities, mostly social engineering, then the AI-in attacks threat is real but not yet transformative at scale.
And the honest answer is that right now, we don't know which world we're in. The researchers who presented at Black Hat have real data from real demonstrations. The skeptics have real data from real breach investigations. Both groups could be right about their respective datasets and still be pointing at different parts of the elephant.